Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and I'm hanging out with Jacob and Jackie. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Great.
And you left your W-2 jobs about 2 years ago. You've been sort of interested in Five for several years, and you have a YouTube channel. You've been traveling a ton, so we're going to dig into a lot of details. And you're actually joining me live in the studio today, so welcome to the studio.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Hanging out in the basement. Love it.
And you've been in Longmont for a few days. Have you been here before? What do you think of the town?
So this is our second time to Longmont. We have a friend from Longmont. And so we have just spent a couple days once before and mostly actually hung out in Boulder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No disrespect to Longmont.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this time we came up to visit our friend and we also picked up a camper shell for our trusty truck, Paula. So that's going to help us go do some more traveling adventures. But yeah, so we decided to hit up you and spend a few more days in Longmont, and we've had a fabulous time.
The timing worked out really well because you were able to join for the sort of now famous potlucks that happen at Mr. Money Mustache HQ, and there were a lot of people in town. It was a big party. So yeah, what'd you guys think of that?
Yeah, it was so nice to be in a group of people that you kind of just have a shortcut language with, like,
yeah,
talking just, you know, travel and rentals and Fi, and, you know, it just was really easy and fun.
Yeah, it was really lucky. I did not know I was going to meet a whole bunch of people. I thought I was just going to meet a few.
Yeah. We had such a good time that Mindy and Carl basically had to chase us out at the end. Like, time to go.
Yep. They flicked the lights, literally.
They're like, come on. You people got to leave. But so it is relatable for people that have been to events like that. And I'll lean on like a Camp Fi where, you know, it's about 50 people. 60 people, and maybe it's one of the first times where there's like a whole room of people that have the shorthand and you're like in the same cult, in air quotes, or subculture maybe is a better way to put it, but it's a cult, right? So yeah, super exciting. And then yeah, seen it many times where it's just like, this is amazing. So, and I think, I mean, that was one of the larger potlucks because it's during the Camp Fi timeframe in the Rocky Mountain area. So there were a lot of people from kind of all over the country and from out of town. So there were probably, what would you estimate the number of people?
50 to 60 I'm thinking of all the different tables of people when they were eating, sitting down and stuff. So. But
yeah, it definitely made me regret not having made it to a Camp Fi yet. So
yeah. Now we're coming.
Yeah. So you guys should sign up for that. Okay. So we're going to talk about a lot of different areas. So you've been not working from your W-2 jobs for a couple of years. You travel a decent amount. You guys have been hiking in South America some and drinking beer down there. We talk about that in the sound check. Geo arbitrage is a big thing. You also didn't, in air quotes, hit your fine number before you left your job. So that's pretty interesting. And it wasn't necessarily a permanent thing at the time. And I'm curious, when did you guys discover Fi and start sort of following along and have it on your radar?
Yeah. So I was the one that found it, I would say. We met in 2013 and we were both broke as a joke, both recent divorcees. So that always does, you know, a number on your finances. And so I started Googling things about finances, trying to, you know, figure out how I was going to afford my mortgage. And I stumbled across, you know, a lot of minimalism stuff. Mr. Money Mustache was one of the first things I found. Frugal Woods, like this is some old school OG stuff. Stacking Benjamins. Why does that sound weird now that I say it?
That's right. Yeah.
We both kind of embraced minimalism easily. I think that's in your nature.
It is. And travel. Right away, we started traveling and we knew that we did it the same way. And we both liked it and wanted to do it more.
Right. And so we were like, we need to figure out how to afford to do this. So, but we didn't really know too much about investing yet. So I think I made us listen on a road trip to The Simple Path to Wealth on an audiobook. And yeah, so we just started kind of, you know, maxing out 401ks, living simply, you know, prioritizing travel and experiences more than happy hours and fancy dinners on date night, stuff like that.
Jacob, on your end, were you sort of a natural saver? Where were you at around that 2013 period?
Complete chaos. So I had actually tried to quit my W-2 job before, but I did it with zero background, just frustration.
Oh, okay.
And that's not a very good ingredient, I found. So then I had to go back after not very long, like less than a year. And I decided I wasn't that great with money. Had never been taught about it really from my upbringing or anything like that.
Gotcha.
But then we met because we both happened to get jobs at a mutual fund company, not actually doing the investing or anything like that, of course, but IT and data.
Okay.
So,
yeah. So then we were kind of forced also to learn, but I think that might have taught us some bad habits working in a more traditional finance industry because, you know, they were like active managers and stuff like that. And then on the side, I was learning like index funds. And
gotcha. Okay. And you touched on it briefly. What kind of work did you guys do?
I was in data operations.
Mm-hmm. I had been a software developer. That's not what my degree's in, but that changes every time.
Oh, yeah. What was your degree?
Cartography.
Oh, really?
Because of the travel love.
Oh, okay.
So,
gotcha. Interesting. Did you watch Arrested Development?
A bit, yeah.
And then Buster. We're losing half the audience here. It's always horrible to reference a show, but like Buster, he majored in cartography as well.
I don't think I ever caught
that.
I did not know that.
In like one of the first episodes, there's a great, great scene and people could look it up. I do know I shouldn't try to describe a scene, a comedic scene that's not going to fly at all. So cartography. Okay. And then what was your degree?
I was actually a social worker.
Okay.
So yeah, after my divorce, I had to move and I couldn't get a job in social work. It was still a bit of the Great Recession time. So I kind of involuntarily retired from social work. The place I could get a job was answering phones at this mutual fund company. So yeah.
Got it. Okay. And then, so you were both kind of a mess around 2013. You met each other. You were working at this place that apparently they'll hire anybody. You don't have any experience? Great. Get in here. So did you have debt going in or were you starting out at zero to lay the groundwork? Because basically you quit your W-2 job within 10 years and then started traveling, which is super awesome. I mean, that's a short time frame. But yeah, did you have debt? Were you starting at zero?
I had a mortgage. I bought a house and that was all my debt. Luckily, I didn't have credit card or, you know, car loan, anything. Cool. So that was good.
Okay.
I had some trouble in the financial crisis.
Okay.
And came out of it with no debt, but no assets either.
Okay.
So
you were at luckily, zero.
I was literally zero. In 2011, I was on food stamps. So.
Yeah.
Okay. You gave us a good headline then. So it's always hard to title these, but food stamps to retired in 12 years. Okay. So very interesting. Like obviously starting at zero is not super awesome, but it's better than being in debt where a lot of people are coming from and, you know, they didn't have the money lessons or maybe they got a credit card or whatever life circumstances, like stuff comes out of sideways. So even if someone does have like the right skills and mindset, maybe they had to go into debt for some other reason too. Mm-hmm. Okay. So 2013, you're getting into this stuff and you're like Simple Path to Wealth. Yeah. How, like, were you both on board right away? Was there any kind of convincing or, like, does it seem like a scam? Anything like that?
I think I was on board right away and you took a bit more convincing, but all I had to say, or you just need to prove things to yourself, which I super appreciate. You're very analytical. But so you needed to run through all of the math and like really understand it. And whereas I was just like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, but, yeah. You know, and basically all I had to say was, this could mean we could travel more. And then he was like, okay, let's look at this. But probably around, so 2015, 2016, we had saved up our pennies and our time off and took a trip to Peru and did our first international backpacking trip, which backpacking is something that we have come to love. And so as I'm like hovering, peeing in a bush, like on the side of a mountain in Peru, I'm just like, this is the most awesome thing ever. How can I do more of this? And I started like figuring out, you know, we had been talking about, oh, now we need to go to the Himalayas and we got to go to the Patagonias and Alaska and all this. And I start like doing the math in my head of like, how many days off do I have a year? How long can my knees handle this hovering and climbing? And that's when it really like we came back from that trip and it like, I think we sat down with a whiskey in the living room and like pulled out a sheet of paper and it was like, okay, how can we make $1 million? Like number one was burgle.
It was like, no idea gets left off.
Yeah. It's a brainstorm, right? No bad idea.
It was a brainstorm. So probably about 25 down the list was work, save money, invest. That's what we did.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. And then you mentioned like the key, and we hear this. It's like, you can't necessarily like shove spreadsheets in someone's face. It's like, what can you get out of this? And it's the travel. And like, you're both on board with the travel. It's a big love.
Yeah, for sure. And not being stuck in the cubicle all day.
Mm-hmm. All right. So did you then put a timeline around it? So you had the plan, you were like, we want to travel more. There's 8 years roughly that are going by here. So what did that look like those few years?
So you have two daughters. Mm-hmm. So we were every other week parenting. So we knew we were going to be in Santa Fe and stable until they were both launched. Hmm. So there was a lot of that going on. And yeah, so in the meantime there too, we got, you know, we kind of started, we were maxing out our 401ks, we had our Roth, we had all this, and I got a little real estate curious. So during that time, that was kind of another way we could kick up our investments and be hands-on. So we actually, in 2019, bought a triplex and did a lot of manual labor.
The only way this was going to work with our finances is if we could live in one of the units and rent out others. Mm. So
yeah, so we did a little house hack situation. And, you know, there were like times where we got off work and had to go fix the toilet.
Right. But,
yeah. So those years, you know, anybody raising kids knows that a lot of those years are a blur.
Okay. Do you still own the triplex?
We do. That's our primary residence now.
Okay. Gotcha. So. And you still rent out two of the... Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then we rent out the other one while we're traveling as well. That's our furnished... We rent it out month to month as a furnished rental.
Okay. And that's then, in Santa Fe?
Mm-hmm. And okay. Then when we want to come back, we just block off time. And that's a pretty crucial ingredient to our lifestyle.
Perfect. In 2019, probably... good year to buy, decent interest rates. Like, I mean, it probably seemed crazy to buy, but like now a few years later, like it's probably appreciated well.
Yes, we were extremely lucky. I mean, so that's the real ingredient to all of our success is luck.
It really is.
Yeah. But no, we bought, I think we closed November of 2019 and it's appreciated. We have like a 2.5%, we were able to refi in 2020 with like a 2.5% interest rate.
Oh, cool. Because it is a primary residence still. Mm-hmm. Oh, dang. Yeah, that's insane. Really cool. Yeah. And I mean, most people won't say, I know you were sort of kidding, but like, we're all like a product of luck and timing and like the right years or the wrong years. And like, you can't probably find a place like that now. And then interest rates are so different than they were. Like the math doesn't work out the same.
Exactly. And I mean, there's no, even though we all go and talk about our stories and everybody has suggestions, there's really no recipe. There's no, you can't be like, do exactly this and it's going to work out just like it worked out for me. So for all the people on their own FI journeys now, it's like, sorry, we can't tell you exactly what's going to work for you. You got to just go out and bumble around.
Yeah.
Jump in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and one of the points that you sent over was around having the perfect plan and kind of having everything figured out ahead of time. And many in the FI community, very broad range. Some people are a little more artistic, some are more engineering minded and analytical. And they're like, okay, I want to actually plan for as many contingencies as possible. And that's a good engineering mindset, but for something kind of fluid, it's much harder. There's too many variables. So can you talk about your approach to being able to pull the trigger? You mentioned this earlier, I'll just say it here. So you were only about halfway to your FI number when you quit working. Is that right?
Yep.
It is. And I guess, asterisk, footnote, this is one thing we didn't exactly agree upon that we had to come together on, that I wanted to go earlier and thought we could live with less. And Jackie wanted to go later and wanted to stock more. And so we... Yeah.
More security.
I would have done it too early, in hindsight. Oh.
Okay. So, yeah, it was a good meeting in the middle. But yeah, I think you were right, I have to say. I think we figured out he was right. So my work was starting to go through an outsourcing of my department, which I was having to help outsource my job and work in a project that was very unpleasant. The youngest daughter had just gone off to college, and, you know, so it was kind of like, well, the house is empty-ish, minus we still had a dog and a cat at that time, and we had enough to wear, you know, some FU money. But in my mind, it was like, okay, well, it's time to go try something, but I definitely wouldn't call myself early retired. Like, this is probably going to be a sabbatical, but let's go try it. And then if we have to come back and get real jobs, we will. And now it's 2.5 years later and we are kind of, you know, luck with the markets, stuff like that. You couldn't know, but yeah, it's looking like, yeah, maybe we could do this forever.
Don't know until you're in it. Yeah. For sure.
So one of the big things, you know, we put together our plans and probably some of the first things we do, like net worth and then maybe like expenses for the year. And we'll look at that for years, like decades, right? Like it's something that many of us are monitoring and we don't know what our expenses will really be when we stop working or your lifestyle changes, or maybe you move or you guys have a geo arbitrage situation and a house hacking situation. So you're able to, like, you know, get some rental income while you're out of town from your primary residence and live in a cheaper place. And you have a nest egg saved up too. So there's components in there, but you also don't know how much it's going to cost if you are going to South America for a little while. So how did you reconcile this uncertainty?
I got to tell you, we put this plan together. We called it the fucking plan because that was the best name we could come up with.
It was the fucking plan to go try crazy things, actually.
And it was very detailed. We were going to make sure our allocations were just like this. And we were going to review it every quarter. And, you know, it also included like how we're going to live our lifestyle. And we fired and it all went out the window.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah, pretty much nothing happened. I would say, you know, all of life is a meditation on uncertainty. And so our finances have just, you know, become that as well. Just like everything is uncertain and we do play it by ear. I think I'm pretty obsessed with having options and flexibility though, with having the rental. We have residency in Mexico. We have our truck camper. I'm like, basically, we've got like five places we could be at any given time if needed. And they all kind of go up and down the scale of cost from zero in the back of the truck on, you know, some boondocking up to, you know, last winter in La Paz on the Baja, California, we splurged and rented like a $1,800 a month apartment with a hot tub and, you know, ocean views.
Nice. So please expand on the plan went out the window. So which areas?
This was all pretty new to us, as we said, like the whole investing thing for me, but also we tried active stuff. We tried, I was day trading for a while and things like that. So it was really like that. That was what we ended on, was this passive income, keep it in broad market stuff, and then keep a certain asset allocation and review it, because we don't know, because it's new to us. And we got out there and it was just, look, we're not working anymore. And we just stopped paying attention to our finances. Basically, we did not reallocate.
I was paying attention. I don't know what he's talking about. Yeah, I'm obsessed. So, see, he didn't even know that I was taking care of things. But
I guess, yeah, you're why we're here.
Yeah. No, I probably review things way more often and obsessively. But yeah, I guess to me, some of the ways in which the plan went out the window was, you know, we were going to have a much more kind of structured life. And we were going to actually, I thought we'd be traveling much more. And yeah, I had a budget in mind and that was super safe. And we kind of blew past that budget. And then I saw, okay, that it still worked out fine.
A little stressful, but fine.
Yeah. Inflation, everything changed, you know, even in Mexico, we thought. Yeah, and then currency risk, the, you know, dollar went down by about 20% while we were living in Mexico. And so it was kind of like, well, do we want to give up or keep going? And it was like, let's keep going. So I can see how that's what you mean with like mm-hmm. it going out the window. But yeah.
Gotcha. How much did you exceed the budget?
We wanted 40.
Mm-hmm. And we spent 50 our first year.
Okay. So like sheer dollar amounts, nothing too crazy, but that's 25% over.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, and it's also funny. We're making breakthroughs here. You're like, oh, you know, we didn't look at anything. You're like, I looked like once a week. Your face was priceless for people that are only listening. Yeah. It's like, dude, what are you talking about? It is like Elizabeth and I, because I don't look that up. I mean, I'm aware. Yeah. I check in maybe like once a month or a quarter, take a look at the balance sheet kind of stuff. She may be in there every day. I'm not 100% sure. But she looks a lot and she's a lot more in the weeds. I think it interests her, but she also gets comfort mm-hmm. from knowing that things are taken care of. And like, we've planned for as much as we can. And it would take a series of like issues that all occur at the same time to break the plan, which is possible, but obviously it's rare because these are outlier events anyway.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay. So when, or what adjustments did you make when you were like, oh, we've exceeded our budget? And actually, I'll just pause there. Did you adjust from it?
I think mindset-wise, I adjusted. And I feel like the way we approach it now is we are reverse engineering. We're going out and we're living the life that we want to live. And if we need to do something to change the finances, then that's what we're going to do. But living strictly to the budget just to be able to, you know, stay retired, that if it wasn't exactly what we wanted, then what was the point? Then we're just slaves to a budget instead of slaves to a cubicle. Mm-hmm. So if it was like, yeah, I want to buy a paddleboard and I want to live in a nice place, or our friends are all going on a trip and it's really important for us to go and maintain that connection, then we're going to spend that money. So more of just like a values-based spending. And as long as we're happy with our spending and it's in line with our values, then we have to go and figure out how to make the finances work. And right now the finances are working with the amount of money we have. I think I was just overly cautious with us with a spending goal to mm-hmm. begin with because of leaving with less. So, you know, I was trying to do like a, you know, 2.5-3% like
mm-hmm. classic withdrawal rate.
Withdrawal rate. Thank you.
Yeah.
I do think we've kind of found an equilibrium though. It feels like, and I know it's still kind of soon. Mm-hmm. It's only two years and change. And so things could change, but I feel like we're spending what we want to do and we're not really, there's nothing that I wish we could do if only we had more money.
Okay.
So it's a nice spot to be at.
Yeah. Interesting. So I want to rewind just a little bit. You mentioned that you started maxing out your 401ks, and did you have a Roth set up? Did you set up a Roth? Did you have a post-tax brokerage? Because you kind of knew like you were going to stop working before you hit 59 and a half, most likely. So how was that sort of allocation of the buckets where money is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have 401ks, Roths. We have a lot in brokerage. We have been doing Roth conversions for the past 2 years.
Okay. So you'll be able to get to those. Okay. So you did plan a little ahead to have some flexibility, like you mentioned.
Right.
Okay.
And then we have a lot of income from the rentals too. So that's part of the plan, definitely, for some liquidity.
Okay. Perfect. And that helps the cash flow and make everything work. All right. Great. And the other part, I'm curious how much you're out of town, like away from Santa Fe, and then how much internationally?
Yeah.
Since we left in February 2023, we immediately left to Mexico. We were there for
6 months.
6 months. And then we came back and we only planned to be in Santa Fe for like one because we need this rental income. But we ended up like, this is a great place to be. And here's all our friends. I said, we ended up spending over 4 months there before going back to Mexico again.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah, so that's kind of the pace that we've decided works better. In my mind, I thought we were going to go and be traveling, like 11 months out of the year. But now we're like, no, we need a solid several months around friends and family back in the U.S.
Okay. Gotcha. It is interesting hearing from people that have traveled more, and some have, everybody has like different constraints to be in a certain place. But I have heard from some people that are like, oh yeah, I thought I'd be gone. Yeah. Like you said, 11 months. And then they're like, you know, it turns out I like my house. So that's one thing we've figured out specifically. We like our house, and we've rented a place in the mountains to get out of the heat in the summer. And a lot of people don't know, in the high country, I mean, we're getting places like 8,000-10,000 feet. They don't have AC up there a lot of times. So it actually gets pretty hot. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just a little warmer up there. So we're in our basement down here, right? It's cool. It's like 10 degrees cooler.
Yeah.
It's warm outside. So interesting. Well, South America, you guys seem to love it. You're spending most of your time down there. What's the draw?
Well, South America, this past trip in particular, was to do Patagonian hikes, go to the big mountains while my knees still have something left in them. So that was the draw for South America. So we did 15 nights of backpacking in, you know, several different countries, and
which isn't a ton if you're like a through hiker or something, but these were all different. We went on 7 different trips.
Yeah.
Backpacking trips.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, and lots of traveling around. So that was really the draw for that. Most of our time though, I mentioned we have residency in Mexico, and that really does feel like our second home. We're from New Mexico. So Mexico is our neighbors, and that was a place that was quick and easy to go on a lot of our trips. And it's a great place. We actually really enjoy the culture, the people, the country is beautiful. So it's kind of our main go-to place.
Gotcha. And with the backpacking and the hikes that you were doing, go ahead, geek out on it. What kind of gear do you bring? People are often into it, or you may not care, but if you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't go for the most ultralight, you know, expensive stuff, but we do get okay. We're about mid-range. We like a little more comfort than some. We take a tent that weighs a little bit more, but we can both sit up in it at in the same time.
Okay.
So we can play cards at night.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a fan that's about this big, about 3 inches long, that we blow up our air mattresses with because I was just tired of, you know, you come in after hiking 12, 14 miles in a day and I don't want to blow up an air mattress. So,
yeah.
So we're definitely not ultralight.
But we also have a bunch of holes in our gear because chipmunks or just wear and tear and I don't know, it's comfortable. So we're putting it together.
But yeah, no, Jacob is in charge of all of the hiking planning and he does an amazing job of finding great hikes that are a bit off the beaten track, not like the most popular hike in that country or something like that. So, and it's just really awesome to be able to get out and see things that so few people ever get the chance to see and really be away from people. It takes a good couple of days walking 8-10 hours a day for my mind to finally shut up and, you know, get all the benefits of that nature.
Yeah. We've actually discussed while we're out there hiking how we don't actually love hiking. We like to go to the places where hiking gets you.
Hiking is long and tedious.
It's funny. And then you have all your gear on your back, which is whatever, 30, 40 pounds or something like that each.
Oh, I'm like 20.
Dry before food and water, we hit around 20.
Okay.
Yeah. I do make all of our backpacking food from scratch with my dehydrator.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Oh, well, Taco Mac is what I'm famous for. That's my trail name is Taco Mac. Oh. But yeah, that helps us keep very lightweight. Mm-hmm. It's one of the ways we stay lighter weight.
Gotcha. I love to cook, so I'm going to ask questions and again, lose part of the audience. So you'll cook, so it's like ground beef. Right. And then macaroni, pasta.
Most of them are vegetarian.
We mostly do vegetarian. So it'll be like textured vegetable protein instead of your ground beef. But
oh, that sounds delicious. Textured vegetable protein.
This is what you want after a long day of hiking. But then we take some like hard sausage or something too. And add some of that in. But
okay. So you make it and then you put, I don't have a dehydrator. So then you put it in the dehydrator and then you.
I do the each element separately.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not like so you cook the pasta and then you dehydrate it. You cook the tomatoes and beans, you dehydrate them separately and all this, you know.
Got it. Okay.
And I have to buy the powdered cheese. That's what is really makes everything good is cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting. And like the people know you could buy like the dehydrated meals or whatever and then you just pour. Hot water reconstitute it. Or I guess you can put cold water. I've seen, I watch a lot of like camper and like through hiker YouTube channels. So yeah, they'll just put in the cold water and then just throw in their bag. Yeah. And then there's like some kind of gross cold meal.
Yeah.
But they're hungry, you know? There's no better way to eat a meal. Okay.
But I want to not undersell either. You do have the dehydrator, but in Patagonia and Chile and Argentina, we ran out of that pretty quick because we didn't want to take a ton because we didn't know if it was going to get across the border.
Sure.
This food.
It could have been confiscated.
Turned out not to be a problem, but we had to dehydrate down there too. And you figured out how to do it in a microwave.
Yes.
And that was pretty impressive.
Okay. How do you do that?
Just the lowest setting for hours and hours. So everybody that we rented an Airbnb from down there, your electric bill was probably kind of high. Sorry.
It's like, what's going on? Interesting. So I have, I'll show you upstairs, but I have an electric smoker that I could dial. I have an external thermostat, so I could dial it to a very low temperature and basically kind of use it like a dehydrator. So I've made jerky in there and stuff like that. Yeah. So I technically could do it and give it a nice smoky flavor too. Interesting. Any other details on the food that you're bringing or dehydrating or anything like that?
No, we do. People often ask us if we bring whiskey, and yes, there is whiskey on every, we always have a flask of whiskey on every hike. So
what else are you going to put into your chocolate?
Yes. Hot chocolate and whiskey is like been a lifesaver after some very hard days of hiking where Yeah. It's not really a good challenging hike if I don't cry at least once.
that's like the, how many times did you cry? It's a two cry hike. Something like
that. Yeah. People are like, why do you go do this?
Perfect. Okay. Let's abruptly transition to mistakes. So you have your truck that you travel in, you travel internationally, you have big financial components, you have mistakes all over the place, I assume. So I'll open it up and you could each share a few or however you want to do it.
Yeah, mistakes.
Well, I actually didn't start maxing out my 401k until 2017. And that's only because I thought I was. And she made me go in and be sure. Because your paychecks seem like they're a little, like, more than we would expect.
Gotcha.
And stuff. And I also had no idea what I was putting it into, like, what investments in a 401k either.
Oh, God.
And that was way after, it was way too late. We should have caught that right. way
We early. Wasted a lot of years in bad funds, for sure.
Yeah. We also, went all in on active stuff just because, I mean, that's what we knew. We worked for a mutual fund company.
Right.
In some active, yeah. Monetary, oh yeah, we chased some returns on some of the like dumber stocks, individual stocks.
Mm-hmm. I got caught up in the GME thing.
Wait, which one's that?
GameStop.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, GameStop. Luckily, it was always like very small amounts that we, gambled with. Gotcha. But, yeah. And then there was a time you left your brand new computer in the bus station in Mexico.
Literally like weeks old.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get it back? Like, was it gone within minutes?
It was crazy. So we stopped in Puebla. This is where we are, Puebla, Mexico. We just showed up on the bus. So it's a big, busy bus station. And to pick up a taxi, you have to go to this booth. They have a taxi booth. And that's where you get your ticket. And then you take your ticket out to the taxi people. Not that odd. So we're standing there and we've got too many bags. And I set it down like right in front of me, got my ticket, and then I walked off. So, and I realized it was probably 5 minutes before I realized I'm missing a bag. And right. I run back to the thing. It's gone, of course. Yeah. So I'm like, it happened. Like, I can't believe it.
Finally, we got something stolen from us. Like, yeah.
And so there was a security guard right over there. So I'm like, in my very limited Spanish, I'm like, did you see my bag? And he's bolsa gris. And I didn't understand everything that he was saying back, but he's like, follow me. We're going to fill out a report, so I can report my bag missing. And we go through this enormous bus station, we keep walking through. He just like leads me right through where the buses park, which you're not supposed to be, but I'm following the security guy. He has me go and like copy my ID first in the copy.
Yeah, you had to go area. Like pay at the copy Mercado thing.
So to get a copy of my ID. And then we go up this tiny little staircase. It looks like, why are you leading me? and I come around and there's my bag right there. So I was like, wow, I almost started crying. Like, thank you so much. And they wanted all the ID and everything just so they could show, yes, I gave it back to you.
Gotcha.
So it was really lucky.
Yeah. No, we're so lucky in all our travels around South America. We've been to Thailand. We've been to, lots of other places. And we've never had anything stolen. We were reverse robbed in Mazatlan, Mexico. So reverse robbed was we had three puppies left on our doorstep. Yeah. So at about 4 a.m, one morning, we start hearing some squeaky noises.
It was really loud.
Yeah.
It was like, someone needs to quiet up their bird.
Yeah. Like, what is going on? And then finally, Jacob gets up about 6:30 to go for a run. And like, he sprints back into the bedroom and is like, puppies! Like, what are you talking about? So yeah. That was our only negative experience with, either getting stuff taken or stuff left. And it turned out to be a great experience, actually.
Gotcha. Yeah. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So we find these little wiggly black worms on our doorstep.
Still had the umbilical cord. They were very, very young. Wow.
Yeah. And luckily, one of the things that I recommend to all financially independent people retiring early is volunteering. That's a great way to use your time. And so we were volunteering at an animal rescue there. So we had the number of the animal rescue lady. And so I'm like, oh, I'm just going to like call the animal rescue lady and she's going to come get these puppies and it's going to be no problem. And she's like, no, like there's no special puppy place that you take puppies and they magically get cared for. She's like, how do you feel about bottle feeding? And like talk about planning and, you know, risk and, you know, black swan events. In like all of our years of planning, I had not considered my feelings on bottle feeding puppies. So I was like, well, give me a second to think about it. It was like, well, I guess they'll die otherwise. So I guess, yes, we're bottle feeding puppies. So she showed up within a half an hour with all the formula and bottles.
That's
and
little, so great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great support.
And we learned about how puppies don't pee or poop on their own. You have to use a cotton swab to rub their little areas.
Their mothers are usually like licking them to do this.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, so, I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah. So we spent weeks on all the ins and the outs of these three little wiggle worms. And every day they got more and more like actual dogs.
And then we went into construction.
Yes.
Because the boy, the biggest one, kept learning how to climb out of things and they would have to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not like, I didn't think they were going to get out. And like, I thought they were going to crawl under the couch and not be able to get out, or I would step on them because they're black and we had black tile at that time.
Yeah. But yeah, it was super fun. We had, you know, we were living in an apartment with no yard or anything. And we just, had puppy chaos. I'm like, that was a was that a mistake raising the puppies? Maybe.
I mean, I was pretty concerned about it at the beginning. I thought this was going to ruin all of our plans because now we were, you know, you can't just get rid of a dog once you have a dog. It's a long commitment.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is ruining everything. But it actually, I had to suck it up and be like, okay, they are pretty cute. Yeah,
they're pretty
and
fun.
They are cool. And I'm glad that we did it.
So. Yeah.
How many weeks were you basically raising them and bottle feeding and all that stuff?
They had to bottle feed for about 5 weeks and then they could eat on their own. And we had them for 10 to 12 weeks total before we had them adopted.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. And puppies are so much work. I haven't had a puppy since I was a kid, basically. And the dogs that I've had since I was an adult, they're rescues. They're, you know, 5 years old, something like that. So interesting.
Yeah. I don't recommend it if you have a job getting a puppy. It's definitely something for the unemployed to do.
Yeah. No kidding. So, you'll be able to visit them and just be friends with them through their lives, basically.
Yeah. So one of them is with my mom. I call him my brother son. And so she graciously lends him to us when we're around Santa Fe and can have him. So we're going to go pick him up and he's going to go travel with us in the truck.
He has gone backpacking with us once and he didn't say he disliked it. So.
He's about a 10-pound chihuahua. So, but typical. That will be, he's going to be the star of the YouTube channel, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Going back to mistakes, just want to give you a chance to mention any others. If you have any highlights that might be in air quotes, like inspiring to other people, but like other people have made mistakes. And it helps folks realize, hey, if you make a mistake, it's not the worst thing in the world. You could do most things wrong if you get a couple things right.
Yeah.
One thing that we hadn't mentioned yet is that I spent about a year and a half day trading. I taught myself how to do this and then started in. And I thought I had some formula that looked at the volatility and things like that. Anyway, I would software developer. I wrote up a little Python script that looked at the market from the day before and gave me things to buy, basically. And that was crazy. It wasn't a total failure. I ended up making pretty much the same as the S&P made.
For a ton more work.
For lots of work.
That's actually pretty good that you like
didn't lose everything.
Yeah.
That year was about 10%. So
interesting. But yeah, it took a lot of time. And
now I say it's a mistake because I would never spend my money that way today.
Sure. Yeah.
But it did teach me a lot about how the market works. So
interesting. What year was it when you were working on this?
2017.
Okay.
2016 into 2017.
Gotcha.
That's when that was going.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that? Because like you read the books, you knew this was crazy, right?
Yeah. No offense. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was sitting there being like, oh, you know, the index funds. But yeah, it wasn't a ton of money. And he was doing all the other things, you know, like investing in the 401k. And yeah, so definitely just let him learn his lesson. And also, I mean, I was like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Like firsthand knowledge, that's one of the things, you know, you can hear it all day long, but until you learn the lesson for yourself, sometimes it's, yeah.
Right. Well, and, you know, like we're saying, like the fact that you pretty much met the index that you were aiming for, like that's fine.
It was kind of surprising just because it's hard to keep track of in the middle of it. And you lose a big one here and you get a big one there. And so.
Quick question on that. Is that net or does that include your transaction costs?
That was net of taxes and everything.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That was net.
So good. You beat the market and then you've had about
but the same. Doing the taxes that year was a mess.
Oh, yes.
But actually, right. I think we made a good amount of money afterwards from lawsuits.
Oh, yeah. For years afterwards, and I think the last one was just like 2022, I would get these emails that say that there's a class action lawsuit going on and you are part of it because you owned between this date and this date. And I've probably got $1,000 out of that. Since I stopped day trading.
Who knew? Yeah. So, index funds.
It's like three different lawsuits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other mistakes?
I'm sure there's tons, but yeah. They're coming. Okay. Oh, yes. I'm sure we're actively doing them right now.
So let's talk about YouTube a little bit. And you also have a blog, and we'll link up so people can go check out this stuff. But why spend time blogging? Why spend time on the YouTube channel? Like, is there anything that you're looking to do or accomplish?
Yeah. So with the blog, I started that years ago just to share my story. Honestly, it helps me just refine my thinking around some of the FI topics. It's mostly about, you know, money mindset and experience and dealing with the uncertainty, dealing with all the mental and emotional parts of money more than this should be your asset allocation. But yeah, so it helps me. And if it helps anybody else out there, then cool. I would like to do financial coaching. I've done a little bit and I'd like to do more. That's one thing I do miss about work is collaborating with people and back to kind of my social work roots and being a manager, kind of having some of that mentorship, helping people through times to get to, you know, doing what they want. That's the goal of the blog.
The YouTube channel we picked up just because, like you said earlier on, or maybe during the sound check, it's what people see. And so it's a natural progression into it.
Yeah. We watched a ton of YouTube videos planning all our trips and thinking about FI.
Feel like I'm giving back a little bit. Like I didn't just take from all these people.
Right.
But I'm putting back into it. So they get an adjustment. And we went straight to the travel portion just because that's the part I was most excited about. I'm the editor, so I get to decide, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There would be no videos if you didn't edit them. So it's whatever you want.
With the travel videos, like what are you trying to capture? Just like tell the story a little bit and like similar to writing, it's like you're refining like what you did and you kind of remember it a little bit better, but what else?
Yeah. A lot that we had watched was all about the gear and which gear to get and when to go to this place or something. And I'm like, that's a little bit dry for my taste. What I really want to do is just inspire people to do that too. Mm-hmm. Look at this crazy adventure. You should go have one too.
Yeah, so it's definitely more about the experience, which is a lot of the ups and downs, peaks and valleys.
Right,
literally. Yeah, there's some crying. There's lots of walking through rain. There's, you know, coming across a gorgeous waterfall with nobody around, and you know, so just kind of sharing the overall experience of what it's like, because there's a lot of people that, you know, never get to go on a backpacking trip like this. In particular, my mother was one of the people. She was like, just couldn't wrap her head around, like, what do you guys do out there? Like, why do you go do this? So yeah, it's basically for my mom.
Walking around with dried food, uncomfortable bedding. Yep. Okay. Anything surprising from YouTube specifically where you're like publishing stuff? Like, is it going how you expected, or just curious?
Oh, man. So you and I met at FinCon last year. At that conference, there was a lot of people who were YouTubers. And I heard it several times that it takes about an hour a minute to publish some of this stuff. That's what a lot of people said. And I got to say, that must be when you're way better than me, because it takes a long time. I'm probably 2-ish hours per minute. And we have some long videos. Yeah. So this is like full-time job when I want to put one together. And that surprised me.
Damn. Yeah. So for people that know, doing a podcast on YouTube, much easier. I'm spending the amount of time here now. And then a wonderful producer, Chris, check out his blog out there. There's a link in the description. He does some light editing, but like, yeah, true, like a video that's intentionally like showing something, not a podcast interview. Yeah, it takes forever. That was like one of the first things that I outsourced, because in theory, I kind of enjoy the editing, but like the amount of time that it takes, I was just like, fuck this. Like, I can't do it. It's too much in it. Like, there are very talented editors that can do it faster, but like there's no shortcut, because I mean, you may be tweaking like a cut to time with the song that you're playing, and it's like the rhythm works, and it's like a Ken Burns, you're treating it like a Ken Burns documentary.
Yeah.
But it's just your travel video. So
just finding the music, something that I like, has the style I want, the feel, it's Creative Commons, you know, because I don't have enough money to pay for stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yet. Way too cheap to pay.
That alone, just finding the music, takes hours and hours sometimes. So,
so we'll point some people to your videos. Do you have a favorite one or two where you're like, this is good and like we want to share it?
Yeah.
I feel like our Bariloche video, Nahuawapi, we spent 4 nights backpacking around there and got into some pretty intense situations that we did not expect. It was not supposed to be this difficult, according to the internet, but
gotcha.
It was very fun too, and absolutely gorgeous. But that was a really good one.
That would be my favorite.
Okay, cool. We'll link up to that one. And yeah, what else with YouTube? Any other things that you have found interesting with it?
Getting subscribers is really hard.
It is more rewarding even without getting a ton of subscribers or views or anything. Like, just the process of us working together on it, and it, you know, we have developed some skills around it that I thought I wouldn't enjoy the process as much as I actually have.
I don't even know that we would have gone back and looked at our photos and videos yet if we had not done this. And so it's kind of restores the memory. It's like, oh yeah, that was really fun.
When is the brewery walking tour in Longmont going to publish? Will that be out in the next couple months probably?
Probably. So I've got to roll in.
Yeah, I'm the project manager. That's right. So I can put it top of the list if, so we should do that.
The puppies and this brewery video are next on the list.
Okay, so. Got it. Okay, and we'll link up however it makes sense. But I was going to say, you mentioned that you do the little brewery video, so you remember like which breweries you have gone to, and it's crazy. Like, I used to remember like all the breweries and bars and beers that I would have, and I don't use is that like I don't use any of the apps, right? Like, I kind of predated those a little bit. And then when they came out, I'm like, I don't have time to, I'm not going to log in and do all this stuff. I don't care.
Ugh, the UIs are terrible on all of those apps too.
And then it's like, there's another app and you got to log in. And it, so anyway, I've forgotten most of the beers and breweries and different places. And I'm like, I think maybe I've been in here before. And of course, you're drinking while you're there. Yeah. That doesn't help your memory.
Right.
But anyway, so you video it and you actually do remember it more. You do something with it and you can like rewatch those videos and you're like, oh yeah, there was a time. There was this massive rainstorm in Longmont. And for some reason, we still walked it. But
yeah,
it was, we kind of accidentally started doing that because we went to Europe in 2018. We spent some time backpacking in Switzerland, and then we went to Prague. And Prague, they have the pivovars. And we were going to go start hitting all these breweries in Prague. And we decided at that point, we were going to take a selfie with every new brewery that we got to in Prague so we could, you know, document that. And then we got home, and we just kept on doing it.
Gotcha.
And then that turned into videos and... and stuff like that. So that's really how I would be able to go back and say, yes, we have been to that brewery, and, or no, we haven't. So.
Right. That's pretty cool. Yeah. So we were at Left Hand and I participated in the little video and it was the first time. And I was like, oh, are we finishing our beer? Like we cheers and then we like drink the whole thing. So kind of, I saw you guys stopped. So I stopped too, but that would have been good. You would have kept rolling. And it's like, Doug just crushed the beer.
That would have been
no reason.
Yeah.
I was like, now you're setting new standards for us.
We got to do it.
Yeah.
Don't enjoy it. Just drink it as fast as you can. All right. Cool. So we covered a lot of ground here. One leftover question I want to ask, I don't have a strong interest in like Mexican residency, but like, what do you get out of that? And then how hard is it for someone to get if they're interested in it? Mm.
Yeah. So it's gotten harder since we did it 2.5 years ago. But it's basically showing financial solvency and dealing with Mexican bureaucracy.
They love their paper.
Literally, there was like a 4-inch stack of papers each of us had to do to jump through this hoop. And then we had to just go stalk the lady at our local consulate in Albuquerque. But yeah, most anybody who's, you know, even Lean Fi would meet their financial requirements. But if you're trying to do just purely income based, it's gotten pretty high. Like I think each person needs about $4,500 a month of income to qualify for temporary residency. Whereas it used to be more like 2,000, but then if you just have an account balance of a certain amount, now I think that's up to like 200,000, where it was only 40 or something ridiculously really low when we applied. But yeah, so have some money in the bank or have a good amount of income, jump through the hoops. It allows you to stay in Mexico more than a tourist visa, which currently the tourist visa is still 6 months.
It's still a long time.
They don't have to give you the 6 months, but if you plan to be in Mexico for more than 6 months at a time, you should work on the temporary residency. You can buy a car, get a license. You can actually apply for public health insurance there that gives you a little basic health coverage while you're there. Those are the main things that I can think of.
That's great. Yeah, it just gives us a backup that is less expensive than Santa Fe. And so we needed somewhere to go reliably.
Yeah, we didn't want to just rely on the tourist visa. And we would honestly like to work towards citizenship.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can have a dual citizenship. We're working on our Spanish. That's the it's a matter of years and passing the Spanish proficiency test. So.
Got it. Okay. The other sort of leftover question is, are you selling part of your portfolio to support like just living expenses and cash flow? Or is it something else? Obviously, you have cash flow from your rental income, but that is one thing where people get hung up. I'll try to mention it as often as possible. I sell every month a small portion, not anywhere close to 4%, but the way we our finances are a little separate. Like I sell and it's totally fine. Some people are hung up on it and they're like, oh, I think I'm a little scared to sell. It's like, you fucking saved this money for so long. Like it's part of the plan. Just like, you're going to be okay. And I think everyone should like be a little more comfortable with it. But how are you guys doing it? Are you starting to actually decumulate?
Yeah. So we left very heavy on cash. We had a lot in money market. And so we used that until we got to about the asset allocation that we wanted for that, of just a cash buffer. And then we did start selling, and that was very hard, actually.
It definitely wasn't on our schedule, according to the plan that we had. We should have done it earlier, but we kind of just like, it's easier just to spend the cash that you have in your cash reserve.
Right.
And we didn't have to do any big capital outflows, you know, or big projects for our rentals. So we had more cash coming in really than we even expected. So we were able to not really liquidate anything, sell anything for almost the first 2 years totally. And then we're like 2.5 years in. So it's only been about the past six months. I like to kind of do it in a big chunk, enough for like 4 months in advance. But then we decided to buy this camper shell thing, right? And it came time to actually, you know, send the money for it after we'd ordered it. And it was like April 4th or something, that the right after Liberation Day, right, to where the market had like totally tanked. And I was like, oh God, like that definitely hit a little different. But so anyway, I was able to like kind of shuffle some stuff around and pushed it off a few weeks, and luckily the market recovered. But yeah, that definitely was an experience.
Goodness. So can you tell us, you mentioned you had a decent amount of cash. Can you tell us in terms of like annual expenses, roughly where that might be?
Yeah. So I like to have about 2 years in expenses. Of a basic expense. So sure. More of like that, more of the $40,000 that we'd like to spend rather than the $50,000 that we're actually spending. But I guess if we really needed to buckle down, we'd have 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. And the other portion, it sounded like you didn't hire an advisor or anything. And an interview that's coming out very soon, it'll be out by the time this episode goes. Someone actually quit in February of 2025. They basically panicked a little bit, and they sold about a third of their portfolio. The thing is, they were probably like 95% equities. Mm-hmm. So like it hit harder. And I mean, really, if you go to an advisor and they're like, hey, you're going to retire in the next 5 years or something, they'll start moving you into bonds a little bit, because you kind of need that in case there's a big market correction, 30, 40%, because you don't want to sell those equities. So it's like, you lose some returns, but if something bad happens in the market, you have somewhere to go. So you had cash, which is good, but like, did you have more bonds? Can you talk about the allocation as you were quitting? Is that something you thought about?
Yeah, I have been anti-bonds, convinced to be anti-bonds, I think, for a good while. So more of our money market was a bit more of that portion. So we're probably 80% in equities. We do have international, we have a good chunk in international, some small cap, some sector specific. So we're not totally like VTA, what is it? VTSAX or whatever, and chill. VTI, I'm in the ETF, so it's VTI. Yeah, right. So we weren't like totally just VTI. We do have some diversification, but, and then with the rental income, that really is much more of the stability, our alternative.
Right. Okay. And that totally makes sense. Like, there were probably people thinking, oh yeah, but the rental income, which is obviously like a big chunk of it, and that adds the stability that you need for cash flow, and probably, yeah, you could shuffle some things around and be in good shape.
I mean, is it perfect? No. Could I pay an advisor to tell me other things? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I do look at it all the time. I'm kind of obsessed with the internet things, and I'm always here, oh, you know, maybe I need a triple leveraged hedge fund of managed futures. That's going to be the answer, or, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far I have not really been convinced that, especially retiring so early, having so much flexibility, still being willing to go back to work, that if we did need to go back to work, I could get a job walking dogs, and mm-hmm. that would probably be enough.
Right.
I have no dependents relying on me currently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes me feel okay being in this risky category that I know is risky.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. So as we're wrapping up here, you both have done, I guess, made great progress in a short amount of time, coming from essentially starting at zero, which is cool. It's a good story, but you're also taking advantage of the geo arbitrage, and you quit before you thought you were ready. So there's probably a lot of people in a position where they're like, actually, I want to do international travel, and I like, this fits perfectly. What advice do you have for them, especially if they're like, maybe they haven't done much international travel, or like they got a taste and they're like, I don't know how to do this now. What sort of tips could you give people that are maybe a couple years behind you, but want to follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, I guess, especially for international travel, I would say, you know, just go and do it, experiment, go for a couple weeks at least to one place, find a Facebook meetup group, find somewhere to volunteer. That will really help you get into a community.
It is intimidating to go travel internationally. I remember I didn't do it ever until after we had met. I had never gone outside of the country. Mm-hmm. So it is intimidating, but the more you do it, it's just like, this is really not a big deal. And our families are both like, isn't that dangerous? Where are you going? Yeah. You know, your uncle actually said, don't call me if you get kidnapped.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, why would you call? You live okay. You don't have no money. But anyway, it does start to feel natural. And you just have to get to that point, and then it's like, it becomes easier.
So. Right. And part of the, you know, it being hard is part of the fun and part of what's so good for you. It's definitely humbling when you go from, you know, maybe a corporate career to not knowing how to check out at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, or how to work the bus system, all this. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the point. Go for the trouble.
Mm-hmm. Be okay with looking silly.
Yeah. And like you said, you get used to it fairly quickly, because like that's 24 hours a day, right? You're just like, we're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, for sure. And that's so that, you know, the name of the blog and of the YouTube channel is Get Lost Blue. That was my nickname. And we found Phi at a time when we were feeling very lost in life, didn't feel a lot of purpose or have a plan or mm-hmm. goals really, but it turned out to be the best thing. So don't be afraid to get lost.
And if people want to find you, they should check out the blog and the YouTube channel, which we'll link up to. And as we mentioned, we'll link up to the video you mentioned before. I forget the place that you said.
Nahuawapi.
We'll link up to that. And then some of the beer tours. I enjoy that kind of stuff too. And people could find you out there. You probably will be at some events and that sort of thing out there, right?
Yeah. Sure. We are decumulating assets and hopefully accumulating communities.
Perfect. All right. Thanks a lot for joining me. And
We're so happy to be here. Thanks so much, Doug.
Yeah. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. I joined you guys briefly for a brewery crawl, basically. So I went to two places, Left Hand and Shoes and Brews, but you had a list of several places. And while I was out, the weather was favorable, although I knew there were going to be a chance of thunderstorms and there were some rumbles earlier in the day. And it is a time of year in the summer where like storms could pop up. They could be quite intense. And it turns out it was so intense that it rained and like the streets flooded. Like it was a lot of rain. And I believe it was around the time frame that you guys were going to be out. So did you get caught in rain out there?
We sure did.
Okay. Absolutely. It,
yeah.
It improved the beer tour, maybe, but I was, we were pretty late in.
It was sobering to run in the rain to the next brewery.
Oh, wow.
We didn't have our rain gear that we normally would have had, just because when we left home in Santa Fe, we had a lot going on there. And so we had to put stuff together really quick, and neither of our rain jackets got included.
Gotcha. Yeah, we had a flat tire that morning and all kinds of stuff. So we ran out without the rain gear. Oh. But yeah, so we had 8 breweries on our list, and the last one closed at 10 p.m., right?
And we couldn't start until 4 because that's when our tour guide, Vince, got off work.
So. Yes. So between 4 and 10, we hit 8 breweries. Walked about 5 miles.
Nice.
I think you joined us for 2 of the best, though. I really enjoyed both of those.
Excellent. Yeah. Those are some of my favorites. So Left Hand and Shoes and Brews, very good. They're right on the Greenway, so it was convenient in multiple ways. And it wasn't raining then. So I am curious. I mean, like when I'm describing the rain, like it was torrential downpour for like about 40 minutes or something like that. And my wife was on the way back from a puzzle competition with some of her friends. And she was like, hey, I think I'm just going to pull, like, I'm going to get dropped off, open the garage door. It's pouring. And I'm like, it's not raining here at all. So I'm not sure what you're talking about. But slowly the rain did make its way. Where were you walking when it started raining, or when you were out to dry, so to speak?
We left Wibby.
Okay.
And went to Pump House. And that's about a 15-minute walk. And
it was sprinkling.
It just started raining when we left Wibby. Mm-hmm. But by the time we got to Pump House, it was coming down pretty good. And mm-hmm. the streets had started to fill up, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
And then after Pump House, we walked to Long's Peak. Okay. And it was still coming down. Gotcha. But that's just a little hop. So.
Yeah. And then we had to walk home, and it was still coming down.
Yes.
Gotcha. I was like, surely y'all have sense enough to just get an Uber at that point, but you walked it.
Well, there's a certain amount of stubbornness that comes after the 4th or 5th brewery.
Yeah. We're pretty stubborn in general when it comes to a goal, a mission, completing 8 breweries on foot.
Yep. Yeah. It made sense when it wasn't raining, because I offered to give you guys a ride. You're like, oh, we kind of walk it. I was like, okay, that's cool. I'll see you over there and I'll have a half a beer before you show up. But yeah, like I said, in the rain, the thunderstorm, like the whole thing, I was like, there's some long walks, but at least that's down Main Street. So there are some overhangs where you get a little coverage.
Yeah, not as many as I hoped, but I thought of that too.
Yeah. All right. Cool walking tour. Do you do this everywhere that you have a chance to drink beers and go to breweries?
Breweries are great. So a lot of people have different hobbies, especially when they travel. And a big one is foodies, mm-hmm. people who like to go to those restaurants. Well, we aren't really foodies people, but it's really cool to go to breweries because everywhere, they're all over the world, and they have kind of a familiar style. Mm-hmm. But they're all different. And so we just love to go check them out. And it kind of introduces us to the place.
Mm. Yeah, breweries have a generally good vibe and there's usually activities going on too that you can meet people, live music or trivia. And, you know, brewers, you sometimes get to meet the people lovingly making the brew. So yeah, we definitely try and hit up as many breweries as possible. We just came from Patagonia, and so we did a pretty epic 20-some breweries around Bariloche, Argentina, and then Valdivia, Chile. That's where we really kind of made a formal, like we'd set a goal and formally try and get it done. So yeah. We were just amateurs before then.
Gotcha. And you get your steps in too. So
exactly. That's good.